20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Happy Sunday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Life in the NFL is not always easy, and just when you think things are starting to go your way and you're up by nine against Denver and you're ready to get your season really on track and Micah Parsons is still healthy and everything seems to be trending in the right direction, everything goes wrong, and then everything goes wrong in the next game, and then everything goes wrong in the next game. All of a sudden, you find yourself in a slightly disaster of a season situation. And while Green Bay's season is not over, it's not done. A loss to the Ravens, a third consecutive loss, and in fairly embarrassing fashion at home when you still have the division to play for at this point in time, at least did prior to the start of this game. It's not how you want to end your season. And week 18 is not going to mean anything for Green Bay. And now they've got a wild card game coming up, probably against Chicago. We'll talk about that. But yeah, things not exactly trending great for Green Bay at the moment. Packers lose 41-24 to Baltimore. We have a ton to get into in this one. Offensive performance, defense, special teams, key takeaways, player of the game, what's next, playoff situations, scenarios, Matt LaFleur's future. We're going to get into literally all of it. So make sure to stick around. I understand and I get when things go wrong like this, especially for the third consecutive week and it's after a loss, there's that need and desire just to want to, you know, rip the Band-Aid and turn the page and not even look at things. But I think there's a lot of interesting stuff to take a look at in this one. And we'll go over to, you know, where Green Bay goes from here, which is, I think, probably what most people are interested at this point. This one had insult, it had injury, had an unbelievable performance from Malik Willis, which I am excited to talk about. Packers are now locked into the seventh seed. We'll talk about that as well. Before we jump into any of it, a huge shout out to brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube member Josh Cornelison. Thank you so much for signing up, Josh. We do have a members-only Q&A coming up today at 11 a.m. Central Time. So if you want to join that, make sure to check out those memberships. Either way, appreciate you guys being here. If you could like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews. Those are always extremely appreciated and would go a long way today after a very disgusting and disappointing loss against Baltimore last night. Let's get to my key takeaways first from this one. Number one, this was a total, complete, and utter no-show by the Packers defense, specifically the rush defense, but by the defense as a whole. I don't know that I have ever seen as poor of a performance defensively against a backup quarterback than I did with Green Bay against Baltimore on Saturday night in prime time with the division theoretically on like they have to win to keep their division opportunities alive. I've never seen anything like that. To know that Lamar is out of this game, you've got Tyler Huntley at quarterback, and your main priority is stopping Derrick Henry and the Ravens running attack. You know that that's what it's going to be. That if you know Tyler Huntley beats you with his arm, so be it, and you tip your cap, but you can't let Derrick Henry and the Ravens rushing attack beat you. And yet, the Ravens run for 307 total rushing yards. 41 points, 414 total yards. The Packers had one sack. It really wasn't. It was a stop at the line of scrimmage by Quay Walker that they counted as a sack. I think it gets reversed this week. He would clearly look like he was past the line of scrimmage, even if it wasn't. It was a non-factor in the game. So I'm going to say zero sacks, zero turnovers, and only two tackles for loss, both by Kingsley and Igbari. I'll say that one more time. 41 points, 414 total yards. I'm saying zero sacks, zero turnovers, two tackles for loss. You did nothing on defense. I would be willing to bet, and I'm not exactly looking forward to grading this one, but I'd be willing to bet that this is going to register, if not my lowest graded game defensively since I started grading, at least in the conversation, because I just don't know where the positives are going to come from. In order to mitigate some of the awfulness of allowing 414 total yards and 41 points, you would need an interception, some sacks, some big time pass rush, and anything, right? That you have nothing. You have one, what, a pass breakup by Keyshawn Nixon in the end zone. You have a pass breakup by Nate Hobbs in the end zone. You have two tackles for loss by Kingsley and Igbari, and that's probably it. Those are probably just about the four highlights on defense. And I'm sure there were a couple other plays. LVN had a couple here and there that will stand out through the course of the tape study. But if I had to guess, this is going to be one of the more harsh grades of a defense that I have ever given. I think deservedly so. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I have some positives to tell you, but I can't imagine how. I can't possibly imagine how. Javon Bullard put this all best. He said, quote, "We couldn't stop the bleeping run. Point blank, period. And we got to fix that bleep tomorrow if we want to go past the wild card game in the playoffs. If we don't, we'll be sitting our ass right back in Green Bay." Kudos to Bullard, calling it like it is. Your mileage may vary as to where this team can go from here. As I talked about, week 18 doesn't matter. We'll go into that in more detail. But where your feelings are as to whether this team can win a playoff game, whether they can make a run, saying win a Super Bowl seems extremely laughable at the moment. I talked about it in depth. I've been talking about it for a little bit now, especially after Micah Parsons went down on defense. I've been talking about it on offense for forever now, but we talked about it with Mike Wall this week in detail. I said, Green Bay can't win anything significant when you can't win in the trenches. And Green Bay can't run the ball with any sort of consistency. Their pass protection is up and down against good defensive lines. They've been somewhat lucky in pass pro that they've gone against two pass rush units that are just bad in Chicago and in Baltimore this week. But against Denver, we saw it was a nightmare. When you had to throw and that defense could get after you, arguably the best pass rush defense in football, I get that. But Green Bay's offensive line stood no chance at the end of that game. And then on defense, now you can't stop the run and you certainly cannot get to the quarterback without bringing pressure. I talked about in the live post game show, that's akin to like not having a starting caliber quarterback. You can't go into the postseason with offensive and defensive lines that are just inherently broken. That's a non-starter. So could they beat whoever they end up facing in round one? Sure. In the wild card round? Sure. Absolutely. Could they maybe, you know, surprise somebody in the division round, get some turnovers or things like that? Sure. Maybe. But winning four games in a row and I hope I'm wrong. I would love to be wrong, but I just don't see it. I absolutely do not see it to make any sort of significant run when you can't win in the trenches on either side of the ball. It would be one of the more absurd, unheard of things in NFL history is to win a Super Bowl with a defensive line that can't get to the quarterback, that currently can't stop the run, and that it struggles in run blocking and has been shaky against good teams in pass protection. You, if anyone would like to show me one of the previous Super Bowl winners that fits that criteria, I will absolutely reopen my thoughts on whether or not Green Bay can win a Super Bowl or not. But right now, with that being what it is, I just don't see it. I just don't see it. Again, I think right now you play this one game at a time, starting in the wild card round, hope to beat whoever you play there and just go from there. But it's really tough to envision a scenario where you could go on any sort of significant run the way that this team has played, especially again on both sides of the offensive and defensive line. Number two key takeaway, as mentioned, Malik Willis was phenomenal. I don't know what more you could have possibly asked out of him. 18 of 21, 288 yards, one touchdown, no picks, 9 carries, 60 yards, and 2 touchdowns. This was a 348-yard, 3-touchdown performance with unbelievable efficiency, 18 of 21, and one of those was a drop by Chris Brooks, which ended the streak of consecutive completions. Another was behind Christian Watson, but Watson still technically hits his hands. That was a bad throw by Willis, but either way, the efficiency with which he operated at, some of the plays that he made with his feet, the 2 read option plays for touchdowns, it was remarkable. It was beyond remarkable what he was able to accomplish. This had the feel for 3 quarters of the Baltimore Ravens versus Malik Willis. Dude just put the team on his back as much as he could. And then the unfortunate situation, because again, Green Bay can't have nice things, is as Malik, like you're down by 10 and Malik has the ball, and you're about to get it, or either were about to get it into plus territory, and he hits a throw to Watson. I think it was Watson on an out on the sideline, and it's all arm, and he tweaks the shoulder, and he goes out. He ends up being fine. He's going to be able to come back in the game. He just said it was discomfort. He wanted to get it checked because he wasn't sure. So they go get it checked. He's fine. He's ready to come back, or he would have been able to come back, I should say. But then Clayton Toon comes in, throws a ball, ricochets off Bo Melton's hands, and it's a pick, and it's game over at that point. Then they score a touchdown at 17 points, and there's no point in bringing Malik Willis back. But he was outstanding. There's nothing more that you can say about it. What he was able to put out there on tape for his future suitors, he's clearly gone. That this will be his last season in Green Bay. He will get an opportunity somewhere to showcase himself, and deservedly so. Absolutely deservedly so. In a game where multiple people no-showed and did not play anywhere near their best brand of football, Malik Willis put his best foot forward, put this team on his back as much as he could, and got Green Bay within three at the end of three. In a game where they couldn't run the ball at all, didn't run the ball at all, and their defense was just nightmare fuel, right? Just absolute nightmare fuel. It's a heck of a game for Malik Willis. Kudos to him. As talked about, my third key takeaway, we don't need to dive into it any further, but the Packers just don't have it in the trenches. They just don't. Specifically right now in defense, but offense in key situations and pass protection and just in the run game, it's just not right. It's not there right now. Number four is this team is in complete no man's land on defense. And I mean complete and utter no man's land. They're struggling to stop the run. In order to stop the run now, you're going to have to bring an extra guy up in the box if this continues. Maybe it doesn't, maybe it does, we'll see, but you're going to have to bring an extra guy up in the box. In addition, you can't pass rush with four, so you're going to have to bring extra players up to pressure the quarterback because you can't just get there with a four-man rush. Okay, those are possibilities of things that you can do. Keyshawn Nixon, Carrington Valentine on islands out at corner. Valentine got benched in this game. Had to come back because of the injuries, but he got benched in this game. And Nixon, I thought, you know, had the nice play in the red zone, and that was about it. I thought there were a couple other plays. He missed a big tackle in the backfield. I mean, collectively, Nixon and Valentine are playing their worst football of the year, and you cannot trust them on an island. So what the hell do you want to do? You know, we can talk about Jeff Hafley having a rough day. Nobody's absolved of anything in this one defensively. This one's on Hafley. It's on the coaching staff. It's on the players, defensive ends, defensive tackles, linebackers, corners, safeties, you name it. It's everyone's fault. When you have that type of performance, it's on everybody. But when you do not have answers to basic questions of how to get to the quarterback with four or any and how to stop the run with your defensive tackles, it's just you don't have great answers for it. You can't cover one-on-one on the outside with your corners. And that's another reason why I just don't think this team has any big-time playoff equity left, is because you are in no man's land on defense, where if you don't bring extra guys in the box, they can run on you. If you do bring extra guys in the box, again, it opens up your outside wide receivers and the play-action game and things like that. And if you are going pass-heavy, you're not worried about any of Green Bay's pass rushers. So you have to bring more. And again, now, like we talked about, Nixon and Valentine out on an island. Well, what would you do if you're Jeff Hafley? I'm completely out of ideas. I have no idea what you'd want to do in that situation. You can't win with four. You can't blitz because you don't trust your corners. It's tough to stack the box because you don't trust your corners. It's no man's land. They're in complete no man's land on defense. And then, of course, number five, injury strike again. Zane Anderson goes out for the game. Kamal Haddon looked like he suffered a significant injury, probably going to be done for the season. Nate Hobbs suffered a knee injury, TBD on how long he's out. Jordan Riley looked like he had an Achilles injury, carted off. You can put two and two together there. He's going to be done for the year. Dontavian Wicks gets a concussion, does not return to the game. You also had Malik Willis that went down for a hot second. And then you also had Chris Brooks, who went in the medical tent for a little bit, ultimately came back out. I do think he returned to the game. So let's talk about our Habish-Rotier injury report in this one. Again, as mentioned, Zane Anderson, ankle, he was ruled out. Kamal Haddon, probably season ending. Nate Hobbs, knee, Jordan Riley's season ending, Dontayvion Wicks' concussion, Malik Willis could have returned, thankfully. Chris Brooks checked out in the medical tent. And the big thing here is at corner, you're down to three. We'll see how long Hobbs is out. Haddon's going to be done. You would think, at least I don't want to say anything with certainty when we don't know, but it certainly seems that way. And then, you know, if Hobbs is even out 2 weeks, and it could be more, it could be less, but if he's even out 2 weeks, you're down to three corners. Valentine Nixon and a corner who's never played defense in the NFL, Bo Melton. That's it. Your only other corner on the roster is Shamar Bartholomew. And he's a practice squad corner. You have Jonathan Baldwin, who was brought in this offseason as a corner, but transitioned to safety. And even if you want to count him as a corner, he's slot only. He can't play outside corner. So Green Bay's going to have to look for reinforcements at corner for sure this week. And just more injuries. Just more and more injuries. And again, at parts of this game, when Anderson, Haddon, Hobbs, Riley, Wicks, when those five were out, you were down to a 43-man roster. A game day roster of 43. That's really brutal. That's really, really brutal. So this one, not to disrespect anyone that's on that list, but there's no Micah Parsons. There's no Zach Tom. There's no, you know, big time player on that list of injuries, but they're just continuing to add up in a real significant way. And I just, as good as the depth is for Green Bay, I don't know how many more injuries that they can kind of handle. And it clearly has had a pretty significant impact and effect on this team. We'll be right back. Hey friends, today's show is brought to you by Prize Picks. It's the holiday season, the best time of the year for sports, because right now we have bowl games, marquee basketball matchups, playoff pushes, and it's all happening right now, all at once. And while you and I are out making decisions every single day, like which gifts to buy, what to get for dinner, which game to watch, there's only one place where it feels good to be right, and that's Prize Picks. And I love how simple Prize Picks is to use, and more importantly, how fun it is to play. This football season's been even more fun with Prize Picks, and getting my picks in for each slate of games has been a super fun part of my football experience. Oh, and guess what? Prize Picks has a brand new feature, early payouts. If your lineup gets off to a hot start, you may now have the option to cash out those winnings before the game even finishes. So join the millions of users and sign up for America's number one fantasy sports app. This week, I'm going with Jaden Reed to put on a show against Baltimore as Green Bay tries to clinch a playoff berth. I'm also looking for big games from Ashton Jeanty, Matthew Stafford, and Bijan Robinson. Now it's time for you to get in on the action as well. Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. All right, so quick question for everyone. What's better, giving the perfect gift, getting the perfect gift, or making that perfect holiday meal for everyone when you're hosting a big holiday dinner? I go back and forth, but my true answer is giving the perfect gift. Well, the best part is that with Omaha Steaks, you can give the perfect gift, you can add it to the top of your wish list this holiday season, and you can order up some delicious Omaha Steaks to cook your family and friends for your big holiday dinner. It's a win-win all the way around. Now, I love how convenient it is to order Omaha Steaks and how much people love receiving them as gifts. I recently gave some steaks as a gift to a family member, and they were beyond overjoyed. It was a pretty cool moment. Also cooked up some Omaha Steaks, and that was a pretty cool moment as well because they were absolutely delicious. And right now, it's the perfect time to save on delicious gifts and holiday hosting favorites. Surprise your friends or family members with the gift of grass-fed, grain-finished beef from a family-owned company with over 100 years of expertise in the meat industry. So save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com, and for an extra $35 off, use code PACKADAY at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com. Using promo code PACKADAY. That brings us to our Luigi's Pizza player of the game, and of course, it's Malik Willis. Malik Willis has now had six legit games that he's played for Green Bay. Now, we're not talking about a little cup of coffee, a throw here or there. And in those six legit games, in those games were Indianapolis, Tennessee, and Jacksonville, and Chicago last year, and Chicago and Baltimore this year. He is 66 of 83 for 925 yards, five touchdowns, no picks, with 36 carries for 244 yards, three touchdowns. If you extrapolate those numbers over 17 games, which isn't even fair because in multiple of those games, he came in and didn't play the full game, just came in for like the second half of Jacksonville, came in last week in the second half. So, or at least or, late second quarter, whatever it was. Like, he hasn't even played full games in some of those. But even if the numbers are what they are and you extrapolate those over 17 games, Willis would be 187 for 235, 2,620 yards, 14 touchdowns, no picks, with 102 carries for 691 yards and 9 touchdowns. So he's been unbelievable. Everything you could possibly want. Yes, he is gone in the offseason. I can't imagine any scenario any longer where he would be back, but he deserves it. He was, he again, put the team on his back. The one run where he breaks multiple tackles to pick up the first down was remarkable. The throws he continued to make, ran really a lot of stuff within this Matt LaFleur offense. It wasn't a specialized offense just for Malik Willis. He ran the offense in a lot of ways. Could not be more impressed. Could not be more impressed. A real bummer to not pay off a game like that from Malik Willis. All right, offensive notes. This was the drive summary for the Packers offense. Touchdown, turnover on downs, fumble, touchdown, halftime, field goal, touchdown, interception, turnover on downs. A disjointed game, not on Malik Willis. The fumble was not his fault. We'll talk about that a little bit. And then, you know, interception was on Tune. Turnover on downs was with Tune. When Willis was in, they were really effective. When he wasn't, they were not. But yeah, as mentioned, Malik Willis was incredible. At one point in this game, the Packers had 24 points on 31 plays, which is an absurd stat. Like almost a point per play when you're at 31 plays is crazy. So 24 points on 31 plays. I thought Christian Watson was fantastic. 5 catches, 113 yards and a touchdown. Romeo Doubs came out strong with that opening catch. He had 3 catches for 62 yards with minimal opportunities. Melton had the big catch down the field, also had the big drop that ricocheted off his hands, ends up in an interception, and ultimately, you know, would be the final dagger in Green Bay. They still had a small chance to win that game up until that point, and once the pick happened, it was completely over. Josh Jacobs finishes with 4 carries for 3 yards. They basically didn't run the football in this one. I thought another takeaway here is Clayton Tune. If you were hoping of like, hey, with Malik Willis leaving, maybe Clayton Tune could be a guy that steps up and becomes the backup. He did not look ready to be the backup. Now, maybe a full offseason with Matt LaFleur and this coaching staff can fix some of the things, but in a very, you know, very, very small sample size, it did not give me any confidence that Clayton Tune could be given the keys to the backup quarterback role and you could feel comfortable with it. I did not get that feel in any way, shape, or form. And then the Sean Ryan missed snap. For those who didn't listen to the postgame press conference or just really kind of used their eyes, Malik Willis is canning the play. And as Matt LaFleur stated in his press conference, he didn't even start his cadence on the play yet. And you're at home. You're at home. It's not like crowd noise is affecting you. But for whatever reason, Sean Ryan heard something. He snapped the ball, hits Malik directly in the head, in the face mask, whatever, in the helmet. And Ravens recover. The rest is history. Just it's crazy the stupid plays that this team has found a way to come up with in some of these games. And that's another one of them. And I don't know if that ultimately would have affected the outcome. Green Bay couldn't stop anyone on defense all game long, but would have been nice to not have that stupid turnover. I'll say that much, but a rough one there for Sean Ryan. I almost mentioned Sean Ryan had the unbelievable grade in game a week ago from both PFF and I. We both graded it extremely high. Sean Ryan's had a propensity in his career. Once he has one great week, it kind of comes back down to earth the next week. And that, I don't know. We'll have to see how he did in you know, blocking, protection, et cetera. But that does have a propensity to happen with Sean Ryan. We'll see if that ends up being the case again this week when we grade it out later in the week. Let's go to the defensive side of the ball. Just your usual touchdown, touchdown, field goal, touchdown, punt, touchdown, touchdown, kneel down performance for the defense. Oy vey. Ravens chose to receive to begin the game. That may not seem like much to you to begin with. The Ravens are on prime time with their season on the line. They're on the road with a crowd that was awesome to begin with, by the way, was awesome. And you've got a backup quarterback. I would say 99 times out of 100, the coach in that situation, when they win the toss, is going to defer to the second half. And they're going to want their defense to go on the field first. Don't put your backup quarterback in that situation right away. And the Ravens said, we want the ball. And that told me all I needed to know about what John Harbaugh and the Ravens offense felt about this Packers defense. And then they went out and they backed it up. They immediately get the touchdown drive. Packers score quick. They immediately get another big touchdown drive. The Ravens ended up with 53 carries on the ground, 22 rushing first downs, 5.8 yards per carry, 307 rushing yards, and 4 touchdowns. There have been 5 players in the last 20 seasons with 200-plus rushing yards and 4 touchdowns in the same game. Derrick Henry today is one of them. Henry had one other game as well in that 5. Raheem Mostert in the 2019 NFC Championship game was another one, obviously also against Green Bay. So Green Bay gets 2 of those distinctions in run defense and really, really unbelievably crappy run defense. What was really disappointing about the defense is they started really bad, right? Well, Green Bay's offense does enough that by the end of the third quarter, they go down, they score a touchdown, and it's 27-24. It's a 3-point game. Kickoff to Baltimore. There's a penalty on the play. Baltimore's got a long field. And they immediately, I mean, pretty much immediately, go 12 plays, 85 yards, and a touchdown. And completely take over the game again. That's your chance on defense. Your offense and Malik Willis just cut it to 3. You've got momentum. The crowd's fired up again. And they go 12 for 85 in a touchdown. Just a brutal, brutal performance for the Packers defense. Rashawn Gary. Did Rashawn Gary get benched in this game? Maybe. Justice Mosqueda, acmepackingcompany.com, put together the snap counts from his snap counts through the course of the game. These are not the official snap counts yet, but this is what Justice tracked. Kingsley Nigbare, 58 snaps. LVN, 46. Rashawn Gary, 33. Nigbare played 25 more snaps than Rashawn Gary. LVN played 13 more snaps than Rashawn Gary. While Rashawn Gary started, he had a much more limited role in this game. And yeah, it would seem that in some way, they decided that Nigbare and LVN gave them the better chance, and it's difficult to argue with it. Brenton Cox had 9 snaps, by the way. Gary ends with 1 tackle and 1 quarterback hit. That's it. 1 tackle, 1 quarterback hit. Now, this was not a great day to get after the quarterback. The Ravens were rushing the ball all day, and Huntley got rid of the ball quick when he did throw. So you're not going to end up with a ton of pressures in this one. But first glance, you know, run defense didn't look great from anybody in this game for the most part. And yeah, it certainly felt like Nigbare and LVN were the 2 defensive ends that they wanted to go with more often in this game. If that's the case, then the writing should be on the wall for Rashawn Gary this offseason, that you just can't bring him back on that contract. Again, whether he has trade value or not could be debatable. I thought maybe he did. Now I'm not so sure. You might end up having to cut him. But man, what a massively, massively disappointing season for Rashawn Gary. Again, I'll say it one more time. It's not, I haven't graded this game or anything yet, so I'm not speaking on this game. I think we talked about this the other day. I think PFF and I both have him as like the 7th graded defender on the team. So he's like, you know, top 7 on defense, but you're paying him, of course, to be much more than that. And especially when Micah was there and he had so much opportunity, he just didn't take advantage of it. And it's no matter what way you want to look at it, you can sugarcoat a couple things here or there, say the run defense has been solid at times or whatever. And for the most part, it has been, but he has not been the player that anyone has wanted him to be. And it's been really, really disappointing. Carrington Valentine also got benched first for Nate Hobbs, and Nate Hobbs goes out, and then, you know, Kamal Haddon gets the opportunity, then Kamal Haddon goes out, and then CB has to finish the game because you're just out of options other than Bo Melton at that point. But he definitely got benched at one point. It looked like to me they were playing other corners, Hobbs and Haddon, on more run-oriented downs, which is basically everything against Baltimore. And then, you know, just you saw he got force pushed by Derrick Henry. He was not great in tackling in this particular game. So in those situations, he missed the tackle on what was, I don't know if it was Flowers or Bateman on the outside, missed that one. And that seems to be when this started happening. But yeah, no, I get it. And then it did seem like when they were in more obvious passing situations that they kind of brought him back. But by the end of the game, you were so injured at corner that it just had to be Nixon and Valentine anyway. But it did look like he got benched at one point in time in this game. Thought Kingsley Nagbari made a couple plays. We'll see how he grades out this week. I have no idea how you fix this defense. We kind of talked about them being in no man's land. I don't know what you do. I have no idea right now. We'll be right back. Quinn Bohanna made his NFL debut. I was not super impressed. I watched him in a few different plays, kind of got pushed into the backfield, but maybe he can make a difference moving forward. Not certainly holding my breath though. And then Bullard and Williams, Evan Williams, did some alternating at safety where they both played that. I'm assuming Williams was probably on a little bit of a snap count. Getting Bullard some time at safety probably helped with that a little bit. As far as special teams go, the Packers now, the first team in the Super Bowl era to lose three games in a season when they didn't punt. Other teams as of last week were 8-0 when they didn't punt. The Packers are 0-3. Just a crazy, crazy stat. Nate Hobbs was actually the first player that got the opportunity to return kicks. Not sure why that was the case. He looked okay or whatever, but then he went down with the injury. Emmanuel Wilson took over after that. It looked like Emmanuel Wilson at one point was going to kneel down the ball at the 1 yard line, which would have been just chef kiss perfect for the Packers special teams. But overall, I would say in this game, the special teams was fine. It was a non-issue. It was nondescript. Nothing that they really did positive. Nothing that they really did negative. Sort of a net neutral, which more often than not I would take, but it was not enough in this one. Packers defense just couldn't do anything, but it, mostly a nondescript game from the Packers special teams. Some other interesting depth chart notes from Justice. Chris Brooks had 20 snaps, Emmanuel Wilson 16, Josh Jacobs only 12. The receivers were very equal. Christian Watson with 26, Dobbs with 25, Golden with 24, Reed with 22, Melton with 17, and then Wicks with the concussion only played in three total snaps. Josh Wiley was tight end one, 28 snaps. Musgrave was number two with 18. And then Dabney had seven snaps at tight end. Jacob Monk and Donovan Jennings got their first snaps of the season, six snaps each at the end of the game in garbage time. As mentioned, Enagbari and LVN were your top two defensive ends from snap count standpoint. And then Carl Brooks was your top defensive tackle with 55, Wooden with 51, Brinson 32, Bohanna 15, and then Riley, who went out with the injury, had 11. A couple other miscellaneous news and notes stuff. I know some people were complaining about the Matt LaFleur challenge at the end of the game with only a couple minutes left. That's a really smart challenge by Matt LaFleur. So you might be thinking, what the hell are you talking about, Andy? He lost the challenge. He lost a timeout. He lost the challenge. How would that possibly? Well, Matt was going to call a timeout anyway to get the timeout before the 2 minute warning. So Matt's going to call a timeout anyway. And you can't challenge again under 2 minutes. So you have your challenge and you have your timeout. You're about to burn a timeout anyway. So it made perfect, and I mean perfect sense for Matt just to say, screw it, I might as well challenge the play. Maybe I get something that breaks my way. Sometimes that stuff happens. It didn't in this occasion. So I saw people, oh, Matt's just challenging stuff for the sake of challenging. Now, he was going to time out and you're going to lose your challenge ability anyway. So you might as well use it or lose it. He used it, saw if he could catch a break. He didn't. And at the end of the day, it didn't work out. But that's a good challenge by Matt LaFleur, even if it was pretty clear that it was going to be a first down and you weren't going to win it. I still think that was the right way to kind of go about it. Packers were at one point plus 84 on the season when they were up in Denver by 9 points. Since that time frame, the Packers have been outscored 83-43, a 40-point differential, and it's just been a complete nightmare ever since then. Actually, that might have even been before the final Derrick Henry touchdown that I put those numbers together. Either way, it's been really a nightmare since the Watson missed throw, which ended up intercepted, and the Broncos take over, and eventually Micah goes down with the injury. It's just been a nightmare ever since then. This will be the last meaningful game at Lambeau Field until next September. Can't get a home field game no matter what. So family night there, training camp, preseason there, and then the next meaningful thing, the true meaningful thing will be, of course, whether it's the regular season week one opener or whenever they open, you know, next year at home. That'll be the next time Lambeau Field is in use for a legitimate Packers game. Season goes by quick. Season goes by very quick. Can't believe we have 1 week left in the regular season following tomorrow. And then, yeah, playoff football is here before you know it. Inactives on the day, Jordan Love, Colin Oliver, Zach Tom, Savion Williams, Nasir Stackhouse, and Baron Sorrell. Had a lot of people asking about Sorrell and Oliver. At the end of the day, we talked about in the pregame show, you probably only need five defensive ends. You don't need six. LVN, Gary, Enigbare, and Brenton Cox are not getting deactivated. And Mosby's too important on special teams. So there's your five. And right now, I don't know that there's any opportunity for Colin Oliver to get in, you know, on the field. Sorrell would probably be up before Oliver would be my guess as well. So barring injuries at defensive end, which is like the one position today that I think did not have an injury, I don't see Oliver being activated anytime soon. Not surprised by that at all. Playoffs. You want to talk about playoffs? Packers are the number seven seed no matter what. Who are they going to play? Well, per the New York Times simulator, they have a 75% chance of playing the Bears, or maybe better stated, the Bears have a 75% chance of getting the number two seed, which is what the Packers will ultimately play in the first round. So 75% Bears, 12% Eagles, 8% Rams, 4% Seahawks, 1% 49ers. So technically still capable of playing the Bears, Eagles, Rams, Seahawks, or 49ers, but the Bears are a very heavy favorite to ultimately end up with the number two seed. The Bears do clinch the division with the Packers loss, so vomit over that a little bit as you're eating breakfast. Packers have the Lions and Vikings to thank for being in the playoffs. If the Lions don't have that late season collapse, Green Bay could have easily not made the playoffs. So thank Aaron Rodgers in Pittsburgh. Thank Minnesota Vikings and JJ McCarthy. But this Lions collapse, which came kind of out of nowhere, and might be the only collapse that's been worse than the Packers one as of late, was really what's keeping Green Bay, or got Green Bay, in the playoffs at this point in time. As far as Matt LaFleur goes, I know we're going to, you know, some fans are going to get riled up and say, fire, whatever. I don't think the Packers fire Matt LaFleur, certainly not now, but at the end of the season, I don't think that takes place. I don't think they fire Goody, even if they lose their next two games and lose five in a row at the end. I don't think that's the case. But you do get into this very unique circumstance and situation with Matt where he's on the final year of his deal. So Matt kind of has a little bit of leverage there. And I don't know how this ends up if they lose their next couple of games, or specifically just losing the first round of the playoffs. I think Matt just gets in another year, but Matt might say, no, you need to extend me. Like, it just, there's a very interesting dynamic that's about to take place there. And I'm intrigued with how it goes. I still very much expect Matt to be back. I don't think he's getting fired. But hey, when you have seasons that end like this, and when you're not playing your best football when you need to the most, and you're not getting wins in the playoffs, there's always going to be a question around you. And so if Matt and company want that to go away, they need to start winning some games in the postseason. As far as Sunday goes, what you want to watch for, there's not really anything in particular, because Green Bay gets a seven seed no matter what. The only thing is, if you're cheering for a specific team to get the number two seed, if you want the Bears in that opening playoff game, 7-2 going to Chicago, well, then you want the way that it's 100% lock is if they lose to the 49ers and then beat the Lions. All right. So lose to the 49ers, beat the Lions, and they have 100% chance of getting the two seed. If they beat San Francisco and then lose to Detroit, they have a 95% chance of getting the number two seed. If they win both of their games, they have only a 39% chance of getting the two seed. And if they lose both of their games, they have a 57% chance. So the best case outcome, if you want to face Chicago, which again, I don't know if you do or don't, but if that's the team you want to face, you want Chicago to lose to San Francisco on Sunday and then beat Detroit the following week. That's your best case scenario. As far as Packers-Vikings goes, that's going to be a glorified exhibition game. A lot of players that are going to be deactivated would be my guess. I'm interested to see how Green Bay handles this, though, because even if they decide they want to rest players, they have so many injuries that I don't know how you can do that effectively. You're going to have, like, they only have four linebackers. They only have three corners at the moment. Yes, they're going to have to get some reinforcements. A couple guys are going to go on IR, but they're going to have a difficult time fielding a team if all of their injured players don't get to play. That's going to be a really interesting dynamic for Green Bay. We'll have to see how that plays out. And we'll, of course, cover it for you all week right here on the Pack-A-Day podcast. I got nothing else for you. It's 5:07 in the morning as I'm finishing up wrapping the recording here. I'll have this up hopefully on audio and video both very, very soon. We'll cover it for you all week again. Get the grades up later in the week and look forward to this exhibition game between the Minnesota Vikings and the Green Bay Packers. And then it's on to the wild card round. And right now, Green Bay just has to do everything in their power to focus on that wild card round and figure out a way with a sort of bye week this upcoming week to absolutely no questions asked get that win in the wild card round. We'll see if they can do it or not. I don't know what to make of it at the moment. Very frustrating day. And by the way, for all the talk about 2010 and whether or not the Packers can replicate 2010, right now they're replicating 2014, where they got really, you know, the everything went against them at the end of the year. They got cold. They lost a few games. They had no momentum, lost in the first round of the playoffs, had no pass rush. You can make the 2010 parallels. There's plenty there. But right now, this is feeling a lot more like 2024. That's going to do it for me today. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donnelly, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Willie Winkelsinkle, The Gable Storm, Pack Attack Cast, Chris Weish, Craig, John D. Metropolis, Hayden Radomski, Devin Lane, Alexander Newell, Bill Reinhardt, Richard Morales, Les Ninau, Beast Bumblebee, Benjamin Sargent, Christian Bradley, Steve Bates, John Mark Lydell, Nemo, and Jake Kohner. I'll see you guys tomorrow or today, hopefully, on the members Q&A. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.